You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Chiefs' Patrick Mahomes had surgery for turf toe on February 10th and is expected to make a three-month recovery and return somewhere around mandatory minicamp, according to their general manager. The Chiefs should hope so. Mahomes signed a 10-year deal worth $450 million, unreal, in July, making him one very valuable investment, fellas. Max, I'll start with you. Do you think Mahomes has become the most important person in sports?
In American sports, on the field of play, yes, he has. And I actually think it's been this way for a while. Understand, he started for three seasons. Three seasons as a starter in the NFL. In the first year, he threw 50 touchdowns, very few interceptions, won the MVP, and if not for a pre-snap penalty, goes to the Super Bowl, and I believe wins it that year. Next year, he wins Super Bowl MVP and improves his touchdown-to-interception ratio. This year, he gets back to the Super Bowl, and without an offensive line and with a defense who got no pressure on the other quarterback, he lost. But actually, you know whose play I'm going to remember from that Super Bowl? Patrick Mahomes. Not that he was perfect, but I thought he was the most spectacular player on the field. He did things that were just unbelievable. He was pressured more than any quarterback ever in the Super Bowl, like as a percentage of his dropbacks. And by the way, was blitzed less than any. So he was constantly on the run for his life, and no one was ever open, right? I mean, and he was facing a guy where it was just the opposite, almost never pressured, and guys were open as a result. The point is, he lost, but not because of his play. And in fact, his is the play I'm going to remember. That's 3 years. 3 years, two Super Bowl appearances, a Super Bowl championship, three AFC title games, and I think only a little bad luck has him from being – keeps him from being 3-for-3. I don't think there's any other player in the NFL where at the beginning of every season, we look at the team and go, them. We like them as at least the odds on favorites, if not the favorites against the entire field, the straight up favorites. I've never experienced that as a football fan until Patrick Mahomes. I think on the field of play, he is the most important person in American team sports.
I think that's utterly ridiculous. I think that LeBron James clearly is that guy. 18th season, 36 years of age, and without him, the Lakers would be the New Orleans Pelicans with Anthony Davis. They'd make the first round of the playoffs. They'd go home. If that, that's who he is. That's who he has been throughout his career. And when you take into account the fact that he's done it for so long, I just don't think it even compares. Patrick Mahomes is sensational, and he's a sensational talent. And it wasn't his fault they lost the Super Bowl. I totally get that. But he's not LeBron James in terms of his importance to a team. I don't think it compares. I really, really don't. The Lakers are nothing without him. I look at Tyreek Hill. I look at Travis Kelce. I look at Sammy Watkins. I look at Mecole Hardman. I look at Damian Williams and those boys. I think the Chiefs could potentially make the playoffs without Patrick Mahomes. They wouldn't win anything, but I think they could potentially make the playoffs without Patrick Mahomes. I don't think that's the case with LeBron James. Wherever he goes, you're a championship contender. Whenever he departs, you fall by the wayside. And I think when you take that into account and you look at the fact that he's done it over a sustained period of time, the fact that we're even asking this question, in my estimation, is utterly ridiculous. Right now, in his 18th season, at age 36, he's averaging 25.5 points, about 8 rebounds, about 7.8 assists. He's shooting 50% from the field, 35% from three-point range. The Lakers are 24-11, having won their last two after losing four straight, primarily due to the absence of Anthony Davis and Dennis Schroeder. I just look at them right now, and I'm like, what's there to talk about? LeBron James clearly is that guy in terms of being the most important player, the most important person in sports. And that's just taken into account on the court of field of play. Off the field of play, it ain't even a discussion.
Well, we're talking about, at least I am, on the field of play. And let me tell you what I find utterly ridiculous, Stephen A. Smith.
Sure.
The fact that in one breath you say, what would they be without LeBron James, the Pelicans? They get to the playoffs and knocked out in the first round, right? Then you said the same thing about Kansas City. In fact, mm-hmm. we know what they were with Alex Smith, who was a solid quarterback then, but not great. What were they? They were a team, maybe you can make the playoffs, they're going to get knocked out early. Just like what the Lakers would be if you took LeBron off. I mean, you have to put someone in his place, just like you have Alex Smith in Patrick Mahomes' place. You put an average player in LeBron's place. Maybe they make the playoffs and they get knocked out early. What's the difference? You know what the difference is? You know why Mahomes gets the edge? Because he's playing football. Because in the NBA, a singular superstar has more sway over the fortunes of a team than any player, including the quarterback in football, until Patrick Mahomes came along. Patrick Mahomes has the kind of influence on success as though he is LeBron James or some superstar in the NBA. And I also love how when this topic comes up, you turn it into a lifetime achievement award. I'm not talking about who I'm more impressed by at their age, who's accomplished more in their career, who has total career value. I'm talking about right now. Who's the most important player on the field of play? I'm not going to pretend it's in a landslide. LeBron has an enormous impact. And there are other players, too, in the NBA who have an enormous impact, including James Harden right now or Joel Embiid or a number of NBA players. I don't think there's anyone in the NFL, including Aaron Rodgers, who has the impact that Patrick Mahomes does.
I don't mean to sound like Dave Chappelle when he's imitating Prince, but this bores me. I'm not interested in this discussion.
You're going to make me pancakes now?
I don't agree with you. Yeah, exactly. The pancakes and all of that other stuff. Or, you know, game, blouses and all of that stuff. When Dave Chappelle was imitating, it was hilarious. But in the end, in all seriousness, I just don't agree with you. I think it's LeBron James. I think it's LeBron James literally by a significant margin. We disagree, and that's that. But this rut doesn't really interest me. This bores me.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Let's stay in the association. With 27 points, 13 rebounds, Joel Embiid has proven himself to be a force within this generation of big men. Last night, he had strong words after matching up with Miles Turner of the Pacers. Take a listen, y'all.
He's a great player, and I have a lot of respect for him, but I say this respectfully, but that's a matchup that I've dominated, my whole since I got to the league. Great defender, he leads the league in blocks, should be up there when it comes to Defensive Player of the Year, and that's also one of my goals. To be Defensive Player of the Year. So in those type of matchups, that's where you take advantage. You got to take advantage of those matchups, especially if, I have my eyes set on being a Defensive Player of the Year.
All right, Max, I know he was your MVP favorite at one point. I don't know if he still is, but that got us thinking about dominant big men. So I want to ask you this. Do you think Embiid is a more skilled big man than Shaq?
Yes, and I want to be very clear. Shaquille O'Neal was better in his NBA than Embiid is in this NBA. Okay, are we clear? For the same people who want to give Mel Kiper grief because he makes a comparison to Tom Brady. Oh, you can't. Shaquille was better in his day than Embiid is in this day. But if we're just talking skills, yes, the answer is yes. Embiid is a more all-around skillful player. Now, Shaq was an underrated passer. He was a very good passer. I always thought of him as a good passer. But Embiid has become a much better passer. In terms of their dominance in the paint, no one ever was as dominant if they got the ball down low than Shaquille O'Neal. But Embiid, in this NBA in particular, is also impossible. He's a legit seven-footer, Stephen A., 250. He's a seven-footer and a wide body, and he's in shape now. But so the down-low skills are there, and he's shooting fewer threes, and he's more down in the paint than before. And as a result, he's at the line more than ever before, and he's shooting 86%. Free throws, much better than Shaquille O'Neal ever did. And even though he's shooting fewer threes, like two or three a game, two and a half, three threes a game, he's hitting them at like 40% or a little better even right now, Embiid. The difference primarily between Shaq and Embiid in terms of all-around skill is Embiid can shoot. In fact, there's never been in the history of the NBA a seven-footer who's a big seven-footer, not a power forward, a center, who can play with his back to the basket with the all-around skills of Embiid. You know, I'm cheating a little bit there because Duncan and Olajuwon more like, you know, a little shorter. Embiid can do everything you want a center to do. He is. He's the most skilled, legit seven-foot wide body ever.
My response to that is Joel Embiid can shoot the ball better away from the basket. He's clearly a better free throw shooter. And so if you want to look at it from a skilled perspective, meaning they're both over 7 feet tall and Embiid could do a little bit more, will I argue with you when you made the points that you make? No, not at all. Here's my retort to it, however. I don't give a damn. It means nothing. Because it ain't about what you can do. It's about what you actually do. And Shaquille O'Neal was 7'1", 320 pounds, was a man amongst boys, and played like it every night for the vast majority of his career. He treated you like the child you were compared to him. He wasn't some pretty boy with a curly afro pulling up from 20 or 23. He wasn't sitting up there trying to dance and dribble the ball on the perimeter and had to wait until a coach got fired and they got tired of getting swept in the playoffs to learn that you're supposed to have your big butt down low and be a man amongst boys. I recall Joel Embiid going on national television and saying, Shaq's right. Get your big behind back down in the post and be a man. And manhandle these young boys. Because compared to you, they are boys. You're making them look like men because you're not playing as hard as you can play. You are not dominating them, which was why Shaq at the time, about a year, year and a half ago, Max, if you recall, sat up there and said if he had to take off his Superman cape and give it to somebody, it would have been the Greek freak Giannis Antetokounmpo because he goes in the hole and treats boys like they are boys. What we're seeing from Joel Embiid now, you applaud him for it, Max. And I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it because I love Joel Embiid. What I'm saying is that it also illuminates what he hasn't done. But he could have done it all along. Did he gain extra pounds? Did all of a sudden he acquire skills he didn't have? These things that you're seeing from Joel Embiid right now are skills he had last year, skills he had the year before, skills he had the year before that. And when healthy, he still ain't used them. So when you sit up here and you talk about Joel Embiid and what he's doing, what you're missing is that the ultimate indictment against him is that he didn't learn and acquire something new. Doc Rivers came to the Philadelphia 76ers and said, what the hell are you doing? Get the ball and do what you're supposed
that's
to do.
That's what Doc said. Look, I respect it.
And that's the difference.
I respect it because you're talking about an attitude. I'm not comparing their attitude. I'm talking about skills.
I'm not saying that you're comparing the attitude. I'm saying you must. I'm saying you're omitting it and just talking about his skill.
Yeah, because that's the question.
That's like somebody learning from Max Kellerman. Max Kellerman, you're teaching him boxing. You're teaching him oratorical skills and what have you. And you even invite them to Columbia with you. And then they get on the air and they start mumbling like Shaq. You'd have a problem with that because you know they know better.
But look,
you know they know better.
I understand your point, but I am just talking about skills. I'm making a specific point about skills. At his size, there's never been anyone like Embiid. And in this NBA, Stephen A., the offensive skills are just half of it. He's the best defender in the league probably this year. And think of how versatile you have to be defensively now compared to back in the day as a big today. I didn't think it was possible for a back-to-the-basket type guy, which Embiid can do, to be an MVP. But right now, I think he is. I saw him put a move. I brought this up yesterday. I saw him put a move on Cleveland over the weekend. A step back, mid-range jump shot, and I didn't know it was Embiid at first. I thought it was a guard or a forward. What? That's Joel Embiid? His skills, we've never seen anything like it in a package like this. And the fact that he can apply it in the modern NBA, both ends of the floor, all I'm saying is we're seeing something
Max,
new.
Mac, fine. And here's my retort to that. Max Kellerman, Joel Embiid is shooting 52% from the field this year. Do you realize that's the first time in his career he shot better than 50% on the season?
Because he moved inside.
Shaquille O'Neal shot better than 52% from the field the first 17 years of his career.
Yeah.
17
all high
years.
Percentage shots,
so,
I get it.
But what I'm saying is, knowing who you are and dominating from that perspective, you got to, when you look at the skill, I'm saying you can applaud it. I'm saying it's an indictment against Embiid because the skills
year.
Have been there. You could have been doing this. Philly
you want to beat him up over what he was
year.
Or what he is now?
Philly might have been to the finals 2 years ago.
Yes. You want to give him his flowers
so
for what
good.
He is now, or you want to beat him up for what he was?
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day. To the NFL we go. One of this year's biggest offseason moves is Philly sending former first-round pick Carson Wentz to the Indianapolis Colts, where he will reunite with his former OC, Frank Reich. We know they had a lot of success together when they were in Philly. Colts all-pro linebacker Darius Leonard expressed his approval, tweeting this out, Max. Let's get to work. Welcome to Indy. Can't wait to see what the future holds in the 317. On that note, we welcome in Darius, who just established the Maniac Foundation. And props to you on doing that, Darius, paying it forward. We'll get into that in just a bit. But we need to have some fun, Darius, because Max is a huge fan of Carson Wentz, in case you haven't noticed. Really gives him a lot of props on the show. Sometimes mixes it up with Dan Orlovsky about this subject. Tell me why you are so excited to have him as your quarterback.
For one, you know, just playing against him in 2018 and seeing how well he played there and hearing all the great things from, you know, Coach Frank and seeing what type of guy he is. You see he's a God-loving guy, and, you know, he's, from what I'm hearing, you know, he put the team first, and that's what you need in the quarterback. And just to see where he throws the ball around, you know, that's something that you would love to see. He moves out of the pocket. He escapes the pocket a lot. So definitely looking to see what he brings to this offense.
Darius, appreciate you being on the show. One of the things that I'm fond of saying about Carson Wentz, even though I think he had a horrible year last year, is that this guy a few years ago was an MVP candidate. And when I talked to Max Kellerman and we talk about bust, I said bust are people that never had it. You understand? Not somebody who had it and then for some reason lost it. So as an NFL player, if you see a quarterback take a dive like he did this last season, where clearly he's not what he once was, but he's still young at age 28, what's the kind of thinking that you guys have about one of your contemporaries that's just fallen off for a season, particularly at the quarterback position? What's the belief system involving that kind of thinking?
You know, everybody, you know, we play this game to, you know, to be the best each and every year. And, you know, sometimes in life, you know, you're going to stumble. You know, sometimes, you know, you're going to fall on your back, but you never get judged from you falling on your back. You get judged on what do you do when you get back on your feet. And, you know, just seeing the things that, you know, what he's capable of doing. And now he's coming to a new team, new weapons, a great offensive line, a great running core, and a great receivers. And I'm just looking forward to knowing that what he did before his season last year. And hopefully we can have that quarterback come out and hopefully lead us to the right direction.
Darius, I thought in 2017 Carson Wentz was the best player in the league when he went down with injury. My criticism started in the second half of 2019 where I saw him falling off. I saw a poor quarterback play, but the press lauded him as being great. And I thought, no, it's getting worse and worse and worse. And not only that, he's believing the press clippings, right? You are a great young player. You're not good. You are a great young player. I haven't noticed you reading your press clippings and believing that and slacking off in the slightest. How do you, as a young player, maintain that high level of play without taking things for granted? Because that's the kind of thing Carson Wentz is going to have to do in order to get back to the way he looked. He's going to have to rebuild.
For me, man, my mindset is everybody who talks trash about you, you want to prove them wrong. So, I mean, I look at every negative comment that's said about me. I like it on Twitter, you know, I talk about it, and I use it as motivation because, you know, ever since I was in high school, you know, everybody doubted me. So my goal is to prove that, you know, I belong in this league, and I never take anything for granted because my brother played it, and I saw he tore his ACL, and I know how quickly, you know, this thing could end. So you never get complacent. You just want to continue to be the best and continue to work each day. That's the mindset through it all.
Darius, you know, listen, you're an all-pro. You're in this league. You obviously have friends, contemporaries in this league, and I find it very, very difficult to believe that once you heard about Carson Wentz coming to your team, that you haven't spoken to some people, even including maybe some of his former teammates. What are the kind of things you have heard about Carson Wentz that has you at this point where you're feeling good and you're feeling comfortable about him being your quarterback moving forward? Can you share that with us?
Yeah, I mean, everybody I talked to only said great things about him. You know, it was more so he's a great leader. He's a great teammate. He's a great father and a husband. And, you know, that's what you need leading the team. You know, you want somebody who's eager to come in, you know, eager to want to work, want to be great. And like you say, he's coming back with Coach Frank, and Coach Frank, one of the greatest offensive mindsets, I think, you know, in his league. And so with him coming here and everybody saying great things, and I feel like, you know, the Colts have a great team, you know, in all three phases, and we just got to somehow put this thing together. With him leading the charge, I think we should be all right.
Well, I agree with that assessment of your team. Your team was just lacking a quarterback with high-end potential in the playoffs, probably that wasn't Phillip Rivers at that stage in his career, which is why he's no longer playing right now, and you hope that Carson Wentz can get you over the top. Is that the key? Does the quarterback play need to show up in the playoffs, or are there other deficiencies on the team, which looks extremely well-balanced, both sides of the ball, that you guys need to get better at in the playoffs?
For me, man, I honestly thought Phillip played well. And, you know, if you look at the Super Bowl, what win that ball game? It was defensive play. And I felt like, you know, this year – we got to be more consistent on defense. We can't just play one great half of football. We got to play four great quarters. So, I mean, if you want to win games in the playoffs or you want to win the Super Bowl, you got to have a great defense. And that's what we got to do with the coach. We got to be more consistent on defense. And I put all the weight on my shoulders, and I think that's what we're going to have to do to win the Super Bowl.
Darius, let me ask you this. We talked about at the top of the show, J.J. Watt left the Texans and he's going to Arizona. We know DeAndre Hopkins did, and we've heard that Deshaun Watson obviously wants out as well. How do players around the league feel about potentially playing for the Houston Texans? Like, what's that conversation like right now?
I honestly couldn't tell you. I'm all in with the Indianapolis Colts. That's, you know, all I talk about. And I'm not too sure exactly what's going on in Houston, but for the Indianapolis, for the Colts, you know, I enjoy it. You know, J.J. Watt's gone, so, you know, that's one of the edge rushers that we don't have to worry about. And if Deshaun Watson leaves, you know, that's a great quarterback we were facing twice a year. So if he leaves, you know, that helps us out a whole lot. So I don't know exactly what they got going on. We just got to continue what we can do as the Indianapolis Colts. Let's get 1% better each day.
When all of us watched the Super Bowl, we were shell-shocked, not necessarily about Tampa Bay's ability to score 30-plus points on Kansas City's defense, but Kansas City's inability to do anything offensively. We didn't see that coming. And I think that some layer of invincibility was clearly stripped from the Kansas City Chiefs. That's for us as spectators. But as a guy that's playing in the AFC Conference that has seen what you have seen from the Kansas City Chiefs, how are you guys, as opponents of the Kansas City Chiefs and anybody else in the AFC, how are you guys feeling about that conference now, particularly with the vulnerabilities you saw Kansas City get exposed to in this past Super Bowl?
We believe that, you know, Kansas City is a great team. And, you know, as you've seen in 2019 when we played them at home, well, at their spot, and we beat them, you know, it's just more so we got to keep Patrick Mahomes in the world. You know, all his pocket, I mean, only all his big-time plays, you know, it's a lot of it coming from outside of the pocket. And you saw in the Super Bowl that the Tampa Bay defense kept him in the pocket a lot, didn't allow him to make more time with his feet, and that's when he's most dangerous. So we got to continue, you know, to follow that route, and hopefully, you know, when we face him again, hopefully we can continue to beat him.
Focused and ready to go. I love it. Before we let you roll, tell us about the Maniac Foundation and why you started it.
The Maniac Foundation, you know, I started it because, you know, I'm a guy from a small town. You know, I love to give back. There's so many people who helped me on my journey to get where I'm at. So I wanted to return the favor. And so now I want to come back. You know, I want to help out kids in Indy, in my hometown, Lakeview, South Carolina, to, you know, give back to families in need. You know, especially we want to talk about, you know, people who don't have enough food on their table. You know, getting the kids back into education, making sure they're falling in love with, you know, doing their schoolwork. And we definitely want to, you know, make sure that they're staying healthy, make sure they're active. So, you know, if you want to learn more about the foundation, you know, you go to maniacfoundation.org, or you can follow us on social media, Maniac Cares. That's the Instagram handle. So just got to give back. You know, that's one thing about me. I just love to give back, love, because you never know what kid needs help. And I was once a kid that needed help. So just as much as I can give back, the much more I can do.
That's beautiful. Props to you. Darius, thank you so much for the time today. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks a lot, bro.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Good to see you.
All right. Take care. All right, guys. Former defensive player of the year, J.J. Watt, joins the Arizona Cardinals pass rush in a deal worth $31 million, $23 million guaranteed. He joins a Cardinal team that hasn't made the playoffs since 2015, tied for the second longest active drought in the NFL. On that note, let's bring in NFL insider Kimberly Martin. Kimberly, good afternoon to you. Where are you? There you are, looking beautiful. I like the coral. I will get to you in just a minute. You know the drill on this show. Start with the fellas. Tell me this, Stephen A. What will J.J. Watt do for the Cardinals?
Well, I definitely think he will improve their pass rush. As a result, I think it'll improve their defense because they got some cats in the secondary who can do some things. And if you got to get rid of the ball quickly, it's going to be that less amount of pressure on your secondary if you got guys like Watt and Chandler Jones that can get at the quarterback. So I definitely think that's going to be beneficial. But in the end, I think the Arizona franchise comes down to Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury and what they're able to do together offensively. I'm sold on Kyler Murray. I'm not sold on Kingsbury. And so as a result of that, I see them moving up. I see them improving. I see them being in the mix. But do I see them winning the division title? No. Do I see them battling for a wild card spot? Yes. Whether or not they'll capture that remains to be seen. He's definitely an upgrade. We can't dismiss what J.J. Watt brings to the table. Since 2012, Chandler Jones is number one in sacks. J.J. Watt is number two. We get all of that. But in the end, I think that where Arizona goes is going to depend in large part to what they're able to do offensively. That's why Kingsbury is there. He damn sure wasn't there because of his resume. I tell you that much.
I see the NFC West as an arms race. I mean, this is the most brutal division in football in a good way. All these teams are going to be really good. And I think the same thing with Arizona. I think they'll be competitive to win the division. I don't know that they win it. I haven't made my pick yet. But I think they're going to be competitive because now coming into year three, we should see what starts to look like the real Kyler Murray, like what he is going to be more. That's generally how it happens. The development year is year two, and then you see what this kid's got, what this young man has got. And so far, it seems like he's got a lot. Meantime, DeAndre Hopkins and J.J. Watt might be on a mission to show the Texans. I mean, think of who's spoken out against the Texans franchise. Not just Deshaun Watson, but Andre Johnson, J.J. Watt. Every icon on both sides of the ball is like, something's not right here. And now J.J. Watt happens to wind up on the same team that DeAndre Hopkins is traded to. I think they're going to have a lot of fun with that. And then it's also what J.J. Watt can do on the field. He didn't get $23 million guaranteed for no reason. When he is on the field, he, among qualified ends, was top 10%, 15 out of like 109, something like, or more than 119, in terms of winning his matchup. So when he's on the field, just because he's not what he once was, which was top, you know, he'd be on the all-time defensive front seven. He's right there with Reggie White and Bruce Smith and Aaron Donald and Lawrence Taylor. Like, he was as great as anyone ever in his prime. So he's not that anymore. But on his way down, he's still better than just about everyone else when he's on the field in terms of the pass rush. And that's going to mean a whole lot if he and Chandler Jones are healthy.
You know, it's interesting because you talk to people around the league and nobody thinks that, you know, J.J. Watt chose the Cardinals just because this team is a contender. It was about the money. That's what you hear from everybody. And don't get me wrong, if J.J. Watt likes it, I love it because I love people getting as much money as they possibly can. But what can he do for the Cardinals? We're about to see because their leading sack guy, Hassan Reddick, he could be a free agent. He could be gone. And he had 12 and a half sacks last year. So I understand that J.J. Watt, pair him with Chandler Jones, this is great. Those two together, top two guys that you know, as far as sacks from 2012, those two guys are at the top. I get all that. But when you talk about what will the Cardinals be, I don't think we really know because they were 8-8. This is a really tight division. Is J.J. Watt the piece that's going to take you over the top? No. As Stephen A. alluded to, I mean, the questions about Kingsbury, they were going on all last year. You know, this offense, them losing 5 of 8 games by one score. You know, what's going on with the offense? You've got a great quarterback. Like, what's not working here? You think J.J. Watt is a very good player, but how much will he be on the field? I think the teams that were interested in him wanted to add him. But add him at their price because the medical, the guys had a lot of injuries. We get enamored with names. Like J.J. Watt is a 3-time defensive player of the year. He's not going to be that in Arizona. Maybe he proves me wrong, but a lot of people don't think so. And he got a great deal, more power to him. But I don't think any of the teams that lost out on J.J. Watt are sitting there thinking like, damn, we just lost out on the Super Bowl. No, they weren't a J.J. Watt away from winning the Super Bowl. And the Cardinals certainly aren't a team that are just a J.J. Watt away from definitely being a playoff contender and a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah, they're not there yet. They're in the NFC West, Seattle, San Francisco, L.A., I mean, listen, they've been in last place. I see no reason to believe why they wouldn't be in last place again, even with the addition of J.J. Watt. But could they make some noise? Potentially. We'll see. But again, my focus is on Mr. Kingsbury. That's where I'm focused on. I'm sorry, Kimberly. That's just where I'm thinking about
it. Let's focus on the money for a second. Let's focus on the money for a second. Kimberly brings up, I think, you bring up a good point about how this seems to not be dictated by what gives me the best chance to win. But I don't know, like, where we came to just as a sports culture, right, where it's like the guy always has to kind of unfairly stack the deck in order to be considered competitive. Is it more competitive if you do what Tom Brady did, which is join a stacked team on both sides that gives you the best chance to win? Or is it more competitive to do what J.J. Watt did, which is to join a competitive team and to see what you can do? In terms of the money, I also think it's kind of funny that fans are like, well, he made a choice for the money. Yeah, the NFL is a TV show, and the playoffs are an even bigger TV show, for which, by the way, you get paid less than the regular season TV show. And the idea that a lot of fans and media have that guys should sacrifice millions and millions of dollars in order to star in a TV show is kind of funny. It's not realistic. The vast majority of athletes who have ever lived, or rational people, do not make that choice. So you got a guaranteed $23 million and you're going to a competitive situation? I don't think he should be criticized simply because he didn't go to a situation where the deck was stacked, where it doesn't matter. They're going to, you know, like he could put them over the top. He just went to a competitive situation and got paid.
Yeah. No, I agree with you, Max. Listen, nobody on this set is going to complain about people giving them money. So that's what J.J. Watt did. Good for him. But I think, again, the conversation with people around the league, they feel like, okay, this wasn't about I need to win a championship. This was I had to get paid. And that's fine. I think that's a good thing. You know, Cardinals, we don't know what they're going to be. They have a lot of question marks. J.J. Watt is going to be their biggest free agent signing. It's not like they have a ton of money left over. So when you think about Reddick possibly leaving and, you know, what other upgrades are we going to see during free agency, I think the draft is going to be key for them just because, you know, it's not like a lot of reinforcements are coming.
Fair enough. To torture the TV show metaphor started by Max, Kimberly's on quite a few of them. She also has a podcast as well. First Take, Her Take. You can check that out every Wednesday. All ladies. Kimberly, thank you for being with us. I was checking out your bookshelf. I'm reading Untamed as we speak. It's good so far. All right, we'll talk to her soon. Fellas, I got some news in the NBA I want to get your take on here. So the Hawks coach, Lloyd Pierce, was fired on Monday, given the hook less than halfway into a season that carried heightened expectations before being hampered by injuries. Atlanta president and GM announced the move in a short statement that he was released by the team. Assistant Nate McMillan will serve as the team's interim coach. Stephen A., I want to start with you. What is your reaction to the Lloyd Pierce firing in Atlanta?
I'm suspicious and I'm alarmed. I'm happy that Nate McMillan, who's been a head coach in the NBA for 16 years and in Seattle, Portland, Indiana. I'm happy that he's the interim coach. Personally speaking, I'd like to see him get the job permanently. If not, I'd like to see guys like Mike Woodson, who had success as the Atlanta head coach years ago, who's an assistant on the Knicks bench, be considered now. But I will say this. Lloyd Pierce, even though the record is not that impressive, 63-120 since being hired in 2018, 20-47 last year, to be specific. After starting off the season 10-9, they've lost 11 of their last 15. I get it. But for the Atlanta Hawks to take this position now, as opposed to the end of the season, it's got my antennas up. Because Lloyd Pierce has been very outspoken about a lot of things pertaining to social justice issues and things of that nature. He clearly has had the support of the organization, at least it appeared to be that way, with the Atlanta Hawks, because they've been obviously on top of things that was transpiring in Atlanta and throughout our nation. But to fire him now, I just find it a bit odd. I find it a bit suspicious, particularly considering how outspoken Coach Lloyd Pierce has been. And Max, the brother just had the birth of his second child like 5-6 days ago. I'm kind of surprised that something like that would happen. It just seems to me, and then you think about what's happening with the Atlanta Storm, the WNBA team, and, you know, he's outspoken and been very supportive of that. You know, obviously it all falls under that same umbrella. Maybe he rubbed people the wrong way. This doesn't seem to be purely just the fact that they're struggling right now. It seems to be a little bit something more that went along with this.
Yeah.
And I'm concerned about it, that he would be fired at this particular moment in time. I don't like it.
Well, you know, I find it interesting that your antenna goes up there. I think it's reasonable to start asking questions.
Yeah.
I'll also say, though, that when you, like, if you look at what's going on with the Atlanta Hawks, they're trying to build around Trae Young. Mm-hmm. And the way they've done it is to spend a lot of money on good but not great veterans, like guys who are available, who they could reasonably sign, and put a team around them, like guys like Gallinari or Rondo, or, you know, like those kind of players. And it doesn't seem to me just to be about veteran leadership around a young core or a young star in Trae Young that will mold the team eventually to be a winner. It seems a little bit mixed up, like they're trying to sort of stay competitive and win now, and they're doing what they can while they're developing Trae Young. But at any rate, those decisions have backfired this year because the record is bad. And when the record is bad, the GM who puts the plan together ain't going to blame himself. Usually what happens is the coach catches it because the GM has the power to do that. Got the power to get rid of the coach, and you ain't going to get rid of yourself. So Schlenk, I believe, in Travis Schlenk, and who's
yes.
Yeah, right, in Atlanta, he ain't going to fire him. He's going to fire the coach when you're underperforming and your plan was to put out a competitive product while you're seeing what you really have in Trae Young, like what he's capable of in terms of how far he can carry a team.
Mm-hmm. Fellas, I want to get in one more debate here that I think is going to be pretty fun. So 59 years ago today, Wilt Chamberlain set a single game scoring record, scoring 100 points over the Knicks. So, Max, I'll start with you here. Which current NBA player do you think is the most capable of scoring 100 points in a game?
This is a tough one. This is a tough one because Devin Booker dropped, 70 last year? And his game reminds me the most of Kobe's, actually, in terms of technically what he can do. I'm going to say James Harden. Because James Harden, when you look at usage rate, like how much a dude has the ball in his hands, his main support teammates who sometimes aren't there, Kyrie's missed for a variety of reasons, Kevin Durant's been hurt, obviously, and that might continue. And the Nets are in a position where Harden will do whatever they need him to do. They need him to distribute the ball, he'll do that. But if they need him to go bananas scoring, he'll do that too. I remember, Stephen A., when Kobe dropped the 81 against the Raptors, the Lakers needed those 81 points. That's why he scored 81. Not just because, look, I can do this, but because that's what was needed. And James Harden showed he's that kind of player. And the man can score from anywhere on the floor. I think Harden maybe has – I don't think anyone's going to get to 100, but maybe Harden has the best shot.
I hear you. I don't think anybody's going to get to 100 either. But to me, if I'm going to sit up there and say somebody has a chance, it's not only the skill set that they have to finish inside and out, but it's one with the assassin's mentality that would have the mindset that that's exactly what I want to do. You know, to think about a Wilt Chamberlain, to think about a Kobe Bryant, it's got to be somebody that says, I want to put on that kind of show. And here I come, and I'm coming to make history, and I'm coming to annihilate you. I'm coming to dance on you and do everything that I can to take your heart right out of your chest. And the name that comes to my mind is capable of doing that is Kyrie Irving. If Kyrie Irving gets on a tear, if you're talking about somebody that can get 81 like Kobe had it, or score 100 points someday in a game where everything they put up just goes in from inside, from outside, and they just demoralize you because they're embarrassing you and dancing on you, not just hitting jump shots, not just shooting from threes, but everything they put up, acrobatically and otherwise, they just have it. Kyrie's that kind of guy, man. Kyrie's that kind of guy. We might have questions about where his head is at sometimes or whatever the case may be because he got deeper things on his mind than basketball, clearly. But in the end, when you look at this brother's skills, he's a showstopper. And if there's somebody that could put on 100 points or 81 points like Kobe did, like literally just went on a tear and you just watched in awe as this brother put on a show, it's that dude right there. It's Kyrie Irving.
That's
the name that comes. Of course, I throw Steph in the equation because of three-point marksmanship. Sure. But I certainly would throw Kyrie Irving in there. Yes.
I'll throw this at you, Stephen A. So we asked everyone at home the same question. And they had Steph Curry as the number one, followed by James Harden, then LeBron, and then Kyrie. Are you surprised our First Take fans
said Steph? Who did you have number three? I heard Steph Curry. You said Steph Curry. Who was the
Steph,
list?
Steph, James Harden, Kyrie, and then no. Steph, James Harden, LeBron, Kyrie.
Not LeBron. Get him out of there. Get him out of there. LeBron's not that dude.
Okay.
He's not after something like that. He's not the kind of guy that would get 50 and go like this. I could get 60. I could get 70. He wanted to play the right way. That's him. He's not the kind of guy that says, hell with this. I'm going to put on this show, and I'm going to make history right now. That's not who he is. Kyrie is like that. That's why I say Kyrie.
All right. All I have to say is thank God you never went to the NBA, because we know you would be that guy, Stephen A.
Hell yeah.
You would be that guy.
I wasn't good enough.
Look at you.
If I was, trust me, I would.
Joe Montana's with us tomorrow. All right. Bye, everybody. Have a fabulous day.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting LectricEbikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.